Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that borders on the absurd. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey Corey.
We're going to talk about asylum seekers and refugees. And we're going to start, Steve, you'll be very excited to learn, with a quick quiz.
Oh, joy.
So, which border is the deadliest in the world with over 23,700 deaths since 2004?
2004? Mm-hmm. 23,700, you say?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess at Syria. It's going to be a border with Syria. I don't know which one, though.
It's the European Union border, actually.
Okay.
Mm. So, also, which country had riot police spraying sleeping migrants with pepper spray and also riot police knocking food out of the hands of aid workers who were giving food to migrants?
That sounds like something that's straight out of Trump's America, right?
No, that's actually happening in Calais. According to a Human Rights Watch report on conditions that migrants face in the camps at Calais, they are two examples of numerous human rights violations that took place by French police over those 18 months.
Pleasant.
Hmm. How many teenage refugees coming from the Calais camp to Britain have committed suicide over the past 6 months?
Over the past 6 months?
Yeah.
200?
Three. So three 18 or 19-year-old men from Eritrea have committed suicide here over the past 6 months, which is, that's according to a Guardian article from a couple of weeks ago, which is leading to questions of the efficiency and effectiveness of Britain's policy in terms of integrating these refugees into society. Which country started a big poster campaign to try and deter migrants, emphasising the dangers of the journey to that particular country? One poster had big red bold letters that said, "No way, you will not make home," with an image of a small ship being tossed in giant waves in the background. And that also translated that warning into Albanian, Arabic, Bengali, Farsi, Somalian, Nepalese, Rohingya and Vietnamese.
Putting Albania in there has just thrown me somewhat. I want to guess Italy.
And that was Australia.
God, the world's an awful place, isn't it?
In fact, supplementary question. How many deaths have there been according to the Australian Border Deaths Database between January 2000 and November 2015?
God, that is a depressing database that exists. A Border Deaths Database.
Mm-hmm.
What's the date range again?
Between 2000 and 2015.
6,000.
1,974.
Ah, You're over-pessimistic.
Really, really are, yes. Final question, though, is how come these reports don't usually make that mainstream media we have now? And how come the emphasis has been on the Trump administration's policies?
I don't know, but I get the feeling we're going to have a discussion and find out.
After this music. Right, Steve, do you want to explain then what exactly has been happening with the Trump administration and refugees and families?
So all over the good old United States of America, the Trump administration has been implementing new immigration, quote-unquote, policies, which you've probably heard about in the news. Ultimately, what seems to have been the case is any individual who has found their way into the United States, across the border, but they've either just tried to enter illegally or they've tried to claim asylum, has then been met with the full force of ICE, or ICE, which is basically the immigration agency for the United States, created under George W. Bush. ICE has a history of being quite, shall we say, heavy-handed in its tactics. Even under Obama, who, as I'm sure we will all agree at this point, even though he had his faults in some areas, is about a bazillion times better than Trump in basically every way. Under Obama, ICE basically kicked out more immigrants than any other president previously. Apparently, Donald Trump has taken this as a challenge of sorts, and he and Jeff Sessions have since brought in policies which effectively separate parents from their children as they enter the United States and are processed and dealt with. Unfortunately, rather than treating children and immigrants and asylum seekers humanely, they have been quite literally thrown into cages. Various images and videos have emerged of basically detention centres where you have young children, young teenagers for the most part, the ones that we've seen, who have been just quite literally are in mesh wire cages of the sorts that you might see in a detention facility for a state prison.
And some of the leaked videos that have come out, actually, I think I've seen ones of young children crying, which are almost impossible to watch.
Yeah, initially at least, the videos that came out were ones which were semi-official, in that ICE and the Trump administration let some journalists in to see, these aren't so bad, completely missing the fact that they had children locked up in cages. But those initial videos were, for the most part, of teenage boys, mostly. Some of them were clearly closer to being adults than children, but a lot of them seem to be around the 13, 14 years of age mark. I don't think that is a coincidence. I suspect that was a deliberate step by the Trump administration and ICE to try and make everything seem as nice and normal as possible. Because, sure enough, when videos got out of smaller children locked in cages, crying, not being fed properly, not being looked after properly, other than by the older kids that just happened to be in the cage with them, suddenly that made the news reports a hell of a lot more problematic for the administration. So I suspect there's been a bit of media manipulation and management attempted on this, which has, quite frankly and quite rightly, gone absolutely ass backwards for Trump and his cronies, because the truth will eventually out, and guess what? Turns out they've actually just been locking kids up in cages.
Indeed, and there was it's 2,300 children that have been separated in this way, and it looks like no one's really done any paperwork on it. They've literally just separated them. So even when and if this policy stops, actually getting the children back together with their families is going to be next to impossible.
Yeah, and it's important to know, actually, at this point, technically speaking, an executive order has been signed which has halted the this policy of separating kids from their parents. However, in the past few days or so, some head counts have been done as part of the official statistics, and these have been released to the press, and the number of kids has actually gone up that are being held. So whilst the policy has supposedly ended, in practice it appears to still be going on in to some extent. And you're absolutely right. No one has taken into account the question of how do you reunite these kids with their parents? Some children seem to have been sent to different states at this point, either for fostering or adoption. There is no notion, quite possibly, that people who are going to be ending up looking after these kids are going to have a clue as to where they've come from. There are some absolutely horrific kind of descriptions I've heard from, I've heard about online, of lawyers talking about how they're representing children who are 4 years old, who don't know what country they've come from. They don't even know what country they're in currently. And they're having to find a way to represent the fact that this kid knows that if they were back at home, they would be potentially being gunned down on the street. And they're having to do that by getting the kid to draw crayon pictures and submit this as evidence to a court.
It also comes off the back of Trump tweeting that a lot of these migrants should be deported without courts, without any form of judicial process at all. The fact that he's comparing MS-13 to animals, and almost implying that a lot of Mexican immigrants are animals, and a lot of dehumanizing rhetoric, and also the fact that he started this campaign 2 years ago comparing basically saying that all Mexicans were rapists and thieves who were coming over to America.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the Trump's favorite tropes at the moment is to basically say anybody who's coming over to the US illegally is probably a member of the notorious gang MS-13, that they're violent criminals, that they're here to quite literally steal your stuff and murder you in your sleep. It is absolutely appalling rhetoric coming out of Trump and his administration. And when you throw on top of that the fact that it is within their power to stop this, like, instantly. It was a policy they started. It was a policy that they've admitted they can end through an executive order, which they've technically signed. But as I say, as of the recording at this time, it doesn't necessarily look like it has stopped. And they've been pretending for weeks that they didn't have the authority, that only Congress could stop it, that in some instances that the policy didn't even exist, and that the policy was started under Obama when it was clearly started under the Trump administration as well.
It's been a typical kind of Trump and Republican defense, in that rather than just have one line of defense and stick to that line, they try all 17 ways of trying to defend the policy, in that there is no, yeah, as you say, there is no policy, or it's Obama's policy, or what have you, and which just means that none of them end up being true rather than just being one line. I mean, that's almost the thing with their response to the Mueller inquiry as well, isn't it? So I suppose there's a couple of things. Maybe what we could say is you mentioned the fact that some people are saying it was originally a Democratic idea. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between what the Obama administration was doing and what the Trump administration is doing now?
So, essentially, as I kind of said earlier, under Obama, ICE was as the most active it had ever been. It is not a traditional agency. It's not like the Secret Service or the FBI that has a long and storied history within the United States. ICE was created under George W. Bush, I believe, in around about 2002, 2003. I could be wrong on the years, though. But essentially, under Obama, they kicked out more immigrants than at any other point in their existence. Given their short existence, this doesn't necessarily seem that surprising, but, you know, it is a fact. The difference, though, between what was happening under Obama and what is happening currently under Trump is that Trump's orders to ICE have basically been just get the job done. We don't really care about treating people humanely. Otherwise, you don't put them in cage. You don't put kids in cages. It is all about being seen to be tough on migration and illegal immigration, because reports are that Trump sees that as the key to Republican success in the midterms at the end of 2018.
And the Obama administration, I don't think, had a policy of separating families, did they, in the way that Trump does. And I suppose then, maybe the other question is that I think I've mentioned before, Populous do a poll on a Friday of the news stories people have mentioned in the previous week. And of the week of the 22nd of June, which is when this policy, I think, was first enacted, and we had a lot of the big media outcry about it.
It was when the news about it broke.
The 20% of people mentioned... 20% of those surveyed mentioned this Trump policy. And that's more people than could recall that the World Cup was starting as a story. That was 19%, this was 20%. And if we go off the pretty subjective standard of political stories that actually get talked about in the office, this story was talked about in the office. My work colleagues don't talk about Brexit. They haven't really had much of a conversation about British politics for ages. But all of them mentioned that, and mentioned this story, mentioned they'd seen the videos, said that they were absolutely appalled by it. Mm-hmm. Now, it is very appalling, but as we kind of hinted in the introduction, there's lots of appalling things that have been happening in terms of treating of migrants and refugees over the past 10 or 15 years. Why is it that this one in particular has cut through when other stories haven't, do you think?
I think part of it boils down to the power of imagery and video. The things you mentioned at the start of the podcast, as horrific as they are, you know, it's very difficult to show visually the deaths of, what was it, 23,700 people that are trying to cross over into Europe. You know, occasionally you get a couple of images, like there was the young boy that was basically dead on the beach at one point. Mm. And you do get some images like that which do cut through and cause people to pay attention. But ultimately, when you compare the story around what Trump's policy is and ICE versus, you know, what's happening in Europe, there's been a much more sustained sense of meaningful imagery in one form or another. So the image of, you know, the initial images that came out, such as the kids locked up in cages, the videos that came out after later on of the young girls in cages looking after crying children. You know, all of those came out in dribs and drabs, extending the story, extending its life, making people pay more and more attention to it. And even then, as a kind of on the side of all of that, as part of the discussion of the story occurred, you had powerful videos, not of the kids or necessarily of the policy itself, but of discussion of the policy. MSNBC anchor Rachel Maddow basically broke down in tears as she had to read out the new breaking news that the Trump administration had set up basically what they had termed tender age shelters, which were where they had sent off babies and young infants to be looked after. Tender age shelters. It's an absolutely horrific terminology. And Maddow breaks down crying and has to cut away to somebody else to talk about the story. It's a powerful image and a powerful message. On the converse side of that, you have the right making ridiculous claims, like Laura Ingraham, the Fox News host, saying, actually, these detention centres, they're like summer camps. Like, if that's where you send your summer camps, Laura, then you are a very, very bad parent. Which in turn feeds into that kind of outrage narrative, which kicks about more on social media, which means people see more and more of these images because they get shared more and more and more. So, and ultimately, I think that's why this cuts through. You've just had a series of powerful imagery, either directly related to the story or kind of discussions about the story, which have just fed into kind of this kind of snowball of coverage, which has just meant eventually you just can't ignore it. You're going to see it at some point.
It's part of it also as well because it is happening in America and the media is more likely, certainly here as well, to lead off on an American story than it is, say, a story from France or what have you.
Yeah.
And especially with Trump himself, I think the stuff in terms of the camp in Calais, which we talked about, and Emmanuel Macron isn't really known as this big bogey figure for being anti-immigrant, whereas Trump is. So maybe it fits that narrative as well.
Yeah, I think a part of it is almost certainly the fact that it's Trump and everybody, you know, loves to hate Trump, quite rightly so, in my opinion. But it's a lot easier to get outraged about somebody you don't like than for someone who's not as bad. And I suspect just because it is Trump, it makes it easier for us to, you know, tweet about it, put it on our Facebook walls and complain in a way that we wouldn't necessarily if it turned out that, you know, even if we were doing something like that. Jarls Wood.
Well, so speaking of Jarls Wood, those of you who have followed this podcast over a few years will know that I've got a little bit of a obsessive hatred for former Immigration Minister Phil Wallace. Now, it was New Labour who started the Jarls Wood Immigration Centre, and there's been a few deaths at Jarls Wood, I think, of people who were there and not treated very well. And because I am a dangerous, obsessed man, I googled Phil Wallace and asylum hopefully to try and deport him to somewhere else, but also to see what his comments had been on the asylum issue. And actually, after he'd had to lose his seat in disgrace after the 2010 leadership campaign, after he'd lied about the Lib Dem candidate being in league with Islamic extremists who wanted to kill him, he gave an interview to the Daily Mail talking about the Calais immigration refugee camps, and said that what was to blame were years of soft-minded liberalism. Bearing in mind, this is meant to be a former Labour minister, and basically said that what Britain should do is run a British-run detention camp on French soil. I don't think David Davis has recommended doing that as part of the Brexit negotiations. Maybe he could try. But he also said that illegal immigrants wouldn't come to Britain if he knew they would be locked up. This is part of harsh rhetoric against asylum seekers that we have seen from people like Macron. We've seen from Willis several times. Yvette Cooper, when she was Shadow Home Secretary, was also saying that the government wasn't doing enough to target illegal immigration. It's one of the reasons there were only, I think, 10 Labour MPs, including people like David Lammy, Jeremy Corbyn, Dan Abbott, who voted against the hostile environment legislation the government was putting through. In that, it seems weird that a lot of mainstream politicians, including mainstream progressive politicians, almost seem to talk about asylum seekers in terms of incentives, as if somehow they won't leave their war zone or will not leave the and try and flee the gang who's persecuting them if we don't treat them nicely.
It is absolutely astounding, actually, that so many people in British politics, and I suspect in international politics across the world, seem to have a lack of understanding of migration and exactly how it works. One of the things you learn about in GCSE geography is push and pull factors. You know, a push factor being this is something which is moving you out of the country you're from, a pull factor being something that is moving you towards somewhere else. So, absolutely, you know, wanting a better job, wanting to earn more money for economic reasons is a pull factor. But what they seem to have forgotten is that for an awful lot of people, what is motivating them is the push factor. It's the fact that they are living in a war zone. It's the fact that there is no opportunity elsewhere for them. It is the basic fact that if they do stay, then actually there's a very good chance they're going to get gunned down in the street. By whether that be by gangs, whether that be by government militia or rebels or whatever. These are people, for the most part, a lot of them, who are running for their lives, not to try and make a quick buck.
So you mentioned the image of the Syrian child, the 3-year-old who was drowned on the sand on the shore. And that didn't actually lead to much change at all in how the European Union approaches the issue of refugees. If you've been looking at the news in the last week, and we'll talk about this on a future podcast, if anything, the attitude towards the refugees has hardened among a lot of the countries in Europe. So even though that image cut through, actually that didn't lead to a more humane policy, or us talking about refugees and asylum seekers in a more humane way. Do you think the fact that this story from America's cut through does mean that we might talk about refugees and asylum seekers in a more humane way? Or do you think we'll forget about it? In fact, in America, it seems to have been forgotten about now because Sarah Sanders couldn't get a meal in a restaurant.
Yeah. I think there's two things here. One is the media narrative will move on. Yeah, it always does. It always has to. And people will forget about it. But it's also the fact that, you know, if this was something that was happening under Obama, I feel like you would actually have more of a case for a conversation to be made, and it's spreading outside of the US. But I feel like because it's Trump, it's very easy for everybody to just turn around and say, oh yeah, but that's Donald Trump. We're not like him. We're better than him. You know, we aren't locking up children. Yes, we are. But, you know, we're not locking up children. And because of that, because people are just able to just kind of hand wave it away because it's Trump and we all know he's terrible. People are just not going to actually give this the introspection that it deserves.
Okay, on that happy, inspiring note, I think we'll end there, but we will be turning back to this issue in a future podcast. Our theme tune is Plucky Good Times by Dave Depper, and James Cram designed our logo. Congratulations again, James, on getting married. So congratulations, James and Claire. Our website's notenoughchampagne.com, and our Facebook page is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. My Twitter handle is paperbackwriter.
And mine is @acousticradical.
Happy plotting.